pick a window. This is the Defenestrate Media Network.
The Left Show is not intended for youngsters. It's not intended for the sensitive. It's certainly not intended for right-wingers. Use your own discretion. Awful swearing.
You know who the best-looking person sitting up there was? Who was it with the cowboy hat?
No, J.M. Bell.
J.M. Bell. Mm-hmm. I don't know who that is.
He hosts a podcast.
Well, he was good-looking.
You pompous, stuck-up, snot-nosed, giant, twerp, scumbag, fuck-faced, dickhead, asshole!
Hey folks, Jeff here. I'm alone this week for one reason or another, so many reasons, but I spent Saturday and Sunday, and we usually record on Sundays, down in St. George, basically cataloging everything left behind by my dad. I'm sitting in the office right now, and I am surrounded by boxes of the portable memories of my dad's life. It's been a rough couple of months, and I know that you guys that listen to the show have been putting up with how infrequently we've been posting, and that's on me. It just seems like every thing that happened on a weekend, at least insofar as I was able to interact with what's been going on. But this weekend, it was a couple of my sisters and my wife, Tiffany, and we managed to get access to Dad's house. And couldn't take everything. Spent almost every penny I have getting a trailer to get out some of the most important things. My dad, it turns out, was a lot more sentimental than I am. I'm more nostalgic than sentimental. I do keep things. I do. And when I die, my poor kids are going to have to go through it all and figure out what the hell to do with it, just like I did this weekend. The difference being, mine are things I've collected because of my interest in them. And Dad collected, for the most part, because he loved the people that interacted with him, that spent time with him. His kids, his grandkids, his great-grandkids, friends he's had for 50, 60, 70, 80 years, all reaching out over the last few weeks to just let us know how special Dad was. There were drawers, drawer after drawer after drawer, full of greeting cards from family and friends, pictures of his children, his grandchildren, his great-grandchildren, all of us. Dad's love for family was monumental. It was gigantic. And I knew that. I knew it, but I haven't had it proved to me like I did this weekend. And it was humbling, frankly. I'm mad for reasons I can't talk about because of some legal drama that is both in the works and to come. I can't talk about yet what his last days were like and why, frankly, we rescued him and brought him up to our house for his last days. There were other revelations, such as how tidy and organized Dad was in most ways, not in all ways. Otherwise, this would have been a quick trip. But, I mean, he still has his taxes clear back to 1971. That's just how organized Dad was. And when you examine a life lived through love and sentimentality versus a life like mine of collectability and you know, collecting unique things and rare things that don't have an emotional impact aside from the dopamine you get when you find something cool, made me re-examine my priorities and wonder, frankly, you know, am I doing it wrong? You know, with the exception of the last few years, you know, Dad went through some really hard times. And the last few years were some of the worst. And yet he always maintained a positive attitude. He always had love and forgiveness in his heart. He was kind to a fault in so many ways to so many people that after he's died, I've had a surprising amount of folks from all age groups just pull me aside or send me a message and just let me know how much Dad meant to him and what a positive influence he was on their life. There was a young man that lived next door named Max. I've never met Max until this weekend. And Max loved Dad. They played chess together. They played blackjack together. And Max, this young, impressive teenage boy, just really adored my dad. And from the stories that Max told, I knew that Dad really liked him and invited him over until he couldn't anymore. Dad was like that. That was just something that when you would go out with him, because we lived in all these smaller towns together, inevitably you would run into somebody who knew him and they would always come over and just beam to be with him. And that's not my life experience. I have friends. I have very close friends. I do get sentimental about things, but I also tend to lose myself in work. It's one of my biggest failings as a parent is just how many things I missed because I was trying to provide. And my dad managed to provide in some very, very thin times and still be present. And so, personally, I have a lot of regret for not only years, chunks, decades of my life, but knowing that my dad was around a lot more often than I reached out. And my dad was around whenever I needed it, no matter, honestly, no matter what the time or the topic. And I'm trying to do that with my kids. And I hope that I am just a fraction as adored by my children as my dad was by his. And it didn't matter. It didn't. I have a step family that he loved just as much as he loved the kids that he picked up when we were babies. His capacity for love was gigantic. It was colossal. And there was always room for more. He did a really good job showing me how to live a life that lifts the people around me. And I have worked on that my whole life. Whenever I've been in a position of authority, it's you take care of those who help you do whatever, whether that be work, whether that just be, you know, emotional stability, anything. You lift those around you, and that's something that my dad taught me. He was consistent. His relationships were built on a foundation of love. And nothing could permanently squash his spirit. He was just the best guy. We drove a trailer, very small trailer full of boxes, home last night, got everything unloaded, took the trailer to the drop-off at the U-Haul. And I got home, and I sat in the car, and I just broke down because of the finality of the action of this weekend. This is probably the last time I'll see that house. It's probably the last time I will see the stuff we had to leave behind. It was a beautiful life. And while the end of it was perhaps not ideal, perhaps not kind, perhaps not loving, pretty close to abusive and neglectful, Dad never stopped loving the people in his life. Always finding a place for forgiveness where he could. Dad set an example I cannot possibly match, but I can try. So for those of you wondering why the show is late today and why it's just me, that is why. I was driving a U-Haul trailer home from St. George, and you're not allowed to drive those very fast, so it took for bloody ever. And I appreciate the messages of love and support I've received from this audience. And just want you to know that those of you that reached out, and even those of you that haven't, because, you know, not everybody does. We are who we are, and we're all a little different. But I've felt your care and concern, and it's meant a lot to me. So I'm going to take a little break now. I'm going to come back. I'm going to do some headline reads and then just call it a Monday for this week. I will do my best to... No, we'll be back next week. We'll be back next week, and everything will swing as close as it can to normal. But in the meantime, thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for caring. Thank you for being supportive. And thanks for not abandoning us during this last two insane months. I love you guys. I really do. Been doing this show for 15, almost 16 years, and a lot of you were the OG crew that have been listening the whole time. And a lot of you are new. And a lot of you are very new. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. We got a couple of mentions that have really spiked traffic. So anyway, Dad, you were the best, man. You were the world to me. I want nothing more than to be able to call you right now and have you talk me down from the sadness and the pain that I'm feeling, because you were always so good at that. And the anger that I have over how you were treated at the end of your life. I know that you would try and talk me down from that too. And for one last time, Dad, just one last time, I'm going to ignore your advice, and I'm going to do what I feel is justifiable. And it's going to take time, and it's going to take lawyers, and it's going to be, frankly, joyous to me. I am going to be a pain in the ass, the likes of which just has not been seen before. You raised me to believe that everybody's your buddy until they're not. And I am going to continue to respect that. I'm going to continue to exemplify what you taught me by example in 99 out of 100 cases. You're the reason I say buddy. And I miss you. Sleep tight, Dad. I hope everything you believed came true. Because nobody deserved it as much as you did. Sleep tight. Tell Dolly hi. Tell her that I love her. And thanks for everything. Everything.
I'm the threat that's already inside the house. I can't be scared away or negotiated with. You can't call the cops on me. You can't even see me. I'm the threat of family fire. And as long as your guns aren't stored securely, I'll be there. Protect your family. Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by Brady and the Ad Council.
One of the stories I had planned on covering this week was an investigative report from the Daily Mail claiming that Vladimir Putin has severe leverage over Trump, has for many years, long before Trump first ran for president in 2016. And it just kind of goes through, I mean, things we've known, things we've assumed, and things we didn't know, including banking and all that. This is one that demands a conversation. You know what I mean? It is a report that needs to be broken down into tinier little pieces. But when you look at the world that Trump is operating in and you realize how compromised he is, you know, what does that say for Ukraine? There were other reports last week that even Netanyahu has dark, dirty information on Trump. And it's one of the reasons why we can't get Trump to take the ceasefire seriously. What kind of a world are we living in where we have let this happen? Is it so important to the right wing to own the libs? To call us snowflakes? To decide that white people are better than everybody else? Is it really that important that we can take peace, love of country, love of our fellow citizens? Seriously? I mean, what is it? Where does it all break down and where does it all stop is the biggest question. We already know it's going to take decades to fix what's been broken just this year. Not even Biden and the gang, no matter what you think of them, could fix all the problems of the first term. And the second term is so fucking out of control that the shining example, the metaphor of the East Wing being torn down with no plan and no permission, even to the point where the guys that tore it down didn't get paid and walked off the fucking job, is such an apt metaphor for the behavior of the Trump administration and Trump himself. He likes to spend time talking about the auto pen and that Biden didn't know what was happening, you know, and maybe, I don't know, I wasn't there. There may be things that did happen that Biden found around about later. But when asked about things like that, Biden always seemed to have at least a half-assed answer. Whereas we find out, Trump goes on his fucking plane and bitches and bitches and bitches about drug dealers And then when he is asked a question, hey, what about that insane drug dealer that you pardoned? And he had no idea. I don't care what anybody says. He had no idea what the fuck that reporter was talking about. He does not know what's going on. There are reports coming out of the White House that he saw Stephen Miller on TV talking about foreign policy and asked everybody in the room, what the hell is Stephen Miller doing on TV talking about foreign policy? That's not what he does. But Stephen Miller's running around acting like an ass. And it's just ignored. He keeps getting invited on television. You know, you tell me. Deep down, what does it all mean? Trump reportedly is now threatening New York City withholding federal funds because he would like New York's Penn Station and the Dulles International Airport in Washington, D.C. named after him, and he won't give up the federal funds that Congress allocated, so this is illegal until he gets what he wants. Trump told Schumer that he'd be willing to release the federal funding for the Gateway Tunnel project, which the president froze last year, in return for renaming two transit hubs after him. Trump has used his name as a brand for decades, especially on his real estate project and his golf clubs. Since returning to the White House, he's been trying to force his name onto a much wider range of buildings and institutions. He's announcing a Trump class of U.S. battleships, the Trump RX prescription portal, which I cannot figure out yet how he's going to steal money from us in that way, but it's there. It's just there. It's going to take an economist to figure it out because he probably had, you know, an evil economist with a goatee figure out how to do it in the first place. Trump even added his name to the U.S. Institute of Peace Building and, of course, the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts. So, narcissism run amok. Look, I'm cocky. I do a pretty good job at feeling pretty good about myself. Never, with any amount of money, could I be self-deluded the way this man is. And my powers of self-delusion are strong. I am. I'm like a Jedi master of self-delusion. I like to think that what I do matters. And I know that sometimes it does. But the Kennedy Center? Really? It's insane. Dulles Airport? It's insane. This is 25th Amendment bullshit. It's important when we get closer to the midterms, that it is an overwhelming deluge of wins because you know they're going to cheat. And if it's tight, if it's just a few seats here and there, it's going to be very easy for them to cheat. It's going to be very easy for Congress, for the House of Representatives to overturn election results and seat whoever the fuck they want if it's close. If it's far from close, if it's a landslide, it's much, much harder for them to perform skullduggery. And that's really what it comes down to. I know that the Democrats have low polling. You know, you've watched the Trump gang run amok for years now, 10 years now. And that's what the right is addicted to. But even those people that are on the right that don't appreciate what Trump's doing, that are looking for an alternative for their vote, especially in these upcoming midterms, are looking at the feckless, spineless, pointless, quote-unquote, leadership of the Democratic Party, and they're finding no solace. They're finding nothing to have them step away from how they normally vote. And so they will, if they vote, will probably vote the same way they always do. They just probably won't be as happy about it. And looking at conservatives, especially MAGA conservatives, they're pretty happy being not happy. They like to bitch. They like to complain. They like to find all sorts of problems, everybody else's fault, and not theirs. I have a relative. We had the argument years back that they were complaining that they were poor, that they had a rough shot, that things were tough for them, and that they couldn't possibly contain any white privilege because they were poor. And it's like, you're poor because you're poor. You're poor because some billionaires have decided that a finite resource, money, it's not infinite. There's only so much to go around, but that they could collect billions of it and exploit the working class at the same time. I mean, it all rolls back to Reagan. You know, it all rolls back to Reagan. And now here we sit, watching our country fall to pieces. And this fucker wants an airport named after him. And a bus stop? I'm not sure what the other one was. What is Penn Station? Buses or choo-choos? I'm not sure. I actually have never been to New York. So we got another report coming out of the Daily Atta about Trump's tariffs having hurt workers and the economy. I think we know this one. You know, most Americans think that tariffs are harming the nation's economy. New poll released, the Marist poll, found out that 56% of Americans think imposing tariffs or fees on imported goods from other countries is harmful to the United States economy. That 56% would be right. Meanwhile, 31% of respondents said tariffs help the economy because they're idiots. And 12% said taxes do not make much of a difference either way. That's me. You know, if I owe taxes and I've got the money, I pay it right away. If I owe taxes and I don't have the money, I make payments as best I can. But I live here. I drive on these streets. I drink clean water. You know, I live in Utah, so I don't breathe clean air. Haven't in decades. But, you know, I do see police officers. There is a fire station just down the street. There's choo-choos that go big and back. Back and forth. You know, there's a lot of things, schools. I can, this very second, I can hear out my window a school just down the street. And there's another one just up the street, not too far from the other. These kids need something in a few years when they graduate high school and they have no fucking options left. And in the meantime, tariffs have raised the price of food. AI is killing off jobs. Billionaire greed is showing record profits and then laying off tens of thousands of American workers. Meanwhile, the Trump regime is just like, well, you know, factories take a little while to build. We're still waiting on factories that were promised 10 years ago. And all we've seen is the industries that promised Trump they would expand in the United States have basically just shrunk, made more, and avoided more in taxes. I don't think Trump realizes how much more money he would have available to steal if his billionaire buddies would just pay their fucking taxes. More recent polling has indicated that Americans continue to view Trump's economic plans, the economy itself, unfavorably. You know? I don't know. This one I don't know how to fix other than to fucking unionize. President Trump on Wednesday claimed that at least one of his lawsuits against the United States government was essentially over and that he won. Tom Lamas from NBC asked Trump about the $10 billion lawsuit against the IRS and Treasury Department that was filed last week, to which Trump answered, strangely, you can't leak documents, and any money that I win, I'll give it to charity. What documents were leaked? When have we seen your fucking taxes? You goon. When have we seen your fucking taxes? What the fuck leaked? What are you talking about? You know, I'm sure I would have seen it on Daily Kos, but there's nothing. There's just you making noises to steal money from the American taxpayer because you found a racket that works for you. You know, not only that, you get to employ your old tricks like not paying the guys who knocked down the East Wing. That very much. That is classic Trump. All right, we're going to take a little break. Let me come back, a few more stories, and then I think we'll call it a day.
Some people won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hey folks, Jeff here.
And Taylor.
And Tiffany.
I just wanted to talk to you for a second about Patreon. At Patreon, you get special content every week that we record. We do a show on Patreon just for you, the listener. Now, what do we get in exchange for that? Cash money.
We're not rappers. I don't know what to do that. Cash money. Money rules everything around us.
It really does. It absolutely does. Including the cost to host these shows. That's all this pays for. We don't do anything else fun with it because we still don't make enough in Patreon to cover the cost of hosting the shows. So why don't you join us? It's a lot of fun. We're a little more inappropriate. We're a little more ribald. We're a little more risible.
Sometimes we're a little more high.
Yes.
Definitely more high.
Definitely more high. So join us over at patreon.com/defenmedia. Patreon.com. D-E-F-E-N.
Reason you are still listening to The Left Show. All right, then, here's some more of that, I suppose.
Republican gun owners and Second Amendment ammosexuals were a little startled last week when Attorney General for the District of Columbia, Jeanine Pirro, threatened to jail anybody who brings a gun to D.C., saying, and I quote, "I don't care if you have a license in another district, and I don't care if you're a law-abiding gun owner somewhere else. You bring a gun into this district, count on going to jail, and hope you get the gun back, and that makes all the difference." She put down her Chablis unsteadily, stared at whoever she was talking to, and dared recrimination. Waiting, I guess, for the snowflake left, you know, to wait. What? The right is going to take away, is going to jail you for possession? Is that, I mean, is that what we're talking about? You carry a gun? Are we finally going to do, are the Republicans finally going to do the well-regulated part of that sentence? Is that what I'm gathering? She said, and you bring a gun into the district, you mark my words, you're going to jail. McCallum praised the United States attorney, quipping that it's amazing how accountability works when people think that if they actually get arrested, they might have to do time and they might be taken off the street. It sort of puts a little different message in people's heads. Meanwhile, Ron DeSantis is saying Second Amendment rights are not extinguished just because an American visits D.C. American gun owners who conceal carry are among most law-abiding citizens in the nation. I'm not going to go with you there. How many of them were on January 6th? They are friends of law enforcement, and they should not be targeted by law enforcement. Costas Maras, director of legal research for the nonprofit Second Amendment Foundation, called Pirro's proclamation a moronic statement. Pirro went on Twitter clarifying in a video that said, every responsible gun owner that I know makes sure they understand the laws where they are going and understand whatever regulation or registration requirements there might be. Okie dokie. I've got an article here about J.D. Vance not apologizing for amplifying smears against Alex Pretty. Some of the things that this little asshole has said and repeated and retweeted and etc. are pretty odious. So this reporter asked if there was an apology due for the shit talk that JD amplified by, as I recall, retweeting a Stephen Miller post that that Alex Pretty, the nurse, who tried to stand up for a woman being abused by her government, was shot to death. And he named him an assassin with ill intent. And asked if J.D. Vance would apologize or if the government would apologize, to which Vance said, for what? The reporter went on to say, you know, for labeling him an assassin with ill intent. Hours after Pretty's death. Baselessly. Talking shit on the nurse as an assassin who tried to murder federal agents, which we know is not the case. J.D. Vance, for what? Ron Wyden has previously warned about spy abuses before they were public. Now he and Mark Warner say that something else is up because Democratic senators are giving a cryptic warning about CIA activities. Not a warning we can do much with, but a cryptic warning. Like, hey, did you hear about the CIA? I can't say nothing, but oh my goodness. But in a public letter to CIA Director John Ratcliffe, Senator Wyden, out of Oregon, revealed on Wednesday that he'd sent another letter, apparently classified, expressing alarm about something the agency's doing. To which the letter from Wyden said, I write to alert you to a classified letter I sent you earlier today in which I express deep concerns about CIA activities. Thank you for your attention in this important matter. Okay. All right. Way to go. You know, when you poll Democrats and the country goes, why would I vote? Why would I vote for Democrats? All they do is write letters. And I mean, it's not far from true. That is all we do is write fucking letters. We don't fix anything. Now, granted, I understand the power dynamic of Congress, both in the House and in the Senate. And I understand that votes are the most important thing and that there are rules and that there are precedent. And it's one of the reasons why I keep stressing on the fact that we just need. I'm not in charge. I'm not in the room. I would like to think that after 16 years of doing this show, I can at least come up with a catchy slogan or a bumper sticker when it comes to why America's important and why she's worth saving. And all I get from Jeffries and all I get from Schumer and all I get from the name of the guy I'm not even going to bother to remember that got elected to run the DNC instead of the guy from the state next door who should have been running the DNC, or fuck it, bring Howard Dean back. That guy had a plan. I see unstrategic messaging on all levels. Rapid response messaging is brilliant. It's important. It's also secondary to an overall primary message, which again, you may not have liked it, but Dean had it before George Lakoff laid waste to the Democratic Party by cutting off our nuts, making us all docile. Before, frankly, Michelle Obama stood up and told us to go high when they go low. Look where that is. Look where we are because of being fucking polite. Polite. It's time to stop being polite. It is time to start behaving as though we give a shit and have a plan. Is there no plan? Or is there a plan you don't like? Look at Maine. You got this guy, salt of the earth guy, former Marine, oyster farmer, fisher, whatever he does, he goes out and does oyster shit. I don't understand. I don't watch Deadliest Catch. I have no idea. There's just some things. I like to know new things, and I will probably figure out the oyster farmer thing at some point, just because it tickles in the back of my head what that really looks like, and I just haven't seen a documentary about it. But you look at Maine, and you got this guy, and he's got a surge in popularity, and he's doing well, and he's polling great against Susan Collins. And what do Democrats do? They find an oldster to come in and primary the oyster farmer. The working American is being replaced, or an attempt is being made to replace him on the ballot with an old white person. It's frustrating as hell to watch my party, the party that brought us the Voting Rights Act, the party that laid waste to its reputation in the South to pass the Voting Rights Act, is behaving this way now. And when it comes down to just pure racism, well, look no further than Trump's interactions with Nicki Minaj. That Trump gold card that is supposedly like your free pass into the United States of America. Well, no, the White House is actually saying that it's just a little souvenir. It's got no value, and that Nicki Minaj is eligible for deportation. All I have to say is, go ahead. Deport her. With your idiot Trump gold card. I can't even with this shit. It's like the owner of a dollar store bought another dollar store and is drunk on power because he's got two managers to boss around. It's like that, but human lives are at stake. Okay, shit metaphor. I apologize. You know, I've had better, but I'm running at a deficit today. And speaking of running at deficits, especially intellectual deficits, Justice Roberts is scrambling to gag his SCOTUS staff after another pro-Trump ruling leaked before it was released. It used to be that Roberts would have a little, every session when new folks would come in, and he'd have a little, we're a family here, which, you know, as a guy working in corporate America, we're a family here. That's a red flag. But he used to describe court members and employees as a family. For years, relied on low-key measures to keep the court's decision-making process a secret. You know, because that's what you want your government to do, and the judiciary is a form of the government, so let's by all means keep things secret. You know, if you're going to ruin somebody's life, don't you want them to have a fucking heads up first? You don't, because you're a Republican, Roberts. But 2 weeks after Trump was reelected in 2024, Roberts summoned the court's employees and asked them all to sign a legally binding NDA requiring them to keep the court's inner workings a secret, said five leaking sources. The agreements, which new arrivals have also been required to sign, threaten legal action if clerks or other members of the court support staff reveal confidential information. It's not clear whether the justices themselves were also asked to sign confidentiality agreements. And the court has declined to comment. But what does that say? I've signed a lot of NDAs in my life. Some okay, and some have been damaging. I signed an NDA in 2016 that just fucked my career right into the dirt. Because in order to get my last paycheck, I had to sign the NDA. And I needed that last paycheck. So I signed the NDA. Open-ended NDA. I'm not supposed to talk about what didn't happen. I'm just supposed to sit there suck it up and let other people set the narrative. And I signed that fucking piece of paper. And I have upheld it. I have kept my yap shut. It's been 10 fucking years. I have signed NDAs for authors I've done work for designers, for songwriters, even for some politicians. That's been a long time. And that wasn't in Utah, just for clarity's sake. There's nothing to look for here. Nobody, no Democrat here has enough power to need an NDA signed. But I mean, that's just what it comes down to, is that the court is misbehaving so badly, they don't want people to know about it beforehand, so they make the employees sign a fucking NDA. And while John Roberts is overdoing that, the Pentagon is threatening Boy Scouts because of their core values. The Defense Department has said that it may end support unless youth group abandons inclusivity and returns to, quote, God and country values, end quote. If you're not hateful enough, if you're not racist enough, if you're not white supremacist enough, the Pentagon would like you to know that you don't get to be here. While they are all paid with taxpayer money, including taxpayers that happen to be gay, that happen to be lesbians, that happen to be transgender, that happen to be bisexual, that happen to be black or brown, that might be Asian. And you know what? Also immigrants from white countries. When we get here and we work, we pay taxes. And those taxes go to pay you so that you can turn around and get your little carousel of hate running in circles. And then you gatekeep your little circle of hate. And you only let in people that are tall and white, blue-eyed. And, you know, it just it sounds familiar somehow, doesn't it? Pete Hegseth has racist tattoos all over his body. There's also that one that I believe used to be a swastika. You know, it looks like the Brady Bunch family that turns into nine squares when you clean it up a little bit. I don't know. That's just my assumption. But yeah, Boy Scouts. You know, one of the Boy Scout tenets, I do believe, is kindness. I do believe I remember that from when I was a Boy Scout. Clean, reverent, thrifty, brave. Starbucks workers are calling on customers to delete the Starbucks app. Baristas are still without a contract more than 4 years after the first stores unionized. The request is the latest escalation in the workers' long-running battle for a first contract. The union Workers United has organized around 650 stores across the country since late 2021, but is still struggling to secure a collective bargaining agreement that guarantees wage increases and benefits. It is disgusting for a corporation worth billions of dollars to force its employees to rely on SNAP and Medicaid so they can keep flying their CEOs to the office on a private jet, said Jasmine Leal, a barista and union leader. She said this last Thursday. She was referring to the Starbucks CEO Brian Nichols' 1,000-mile commute from Southern California to Starbucks Seattle headquarters. In emails and social media posts last week, the union has urged customers to uninstall the app and encouraged five friends to do the same. The effort has the backing of the AFL-CIO Labor Federation. A successful campaign could deliver a blow to sales. Starbucks said on an earnings call last year that more than 30% of its transactions were coming in from the mobile app. Starbucks spokesperson J.C. Anderson said that the union's efforts hadn't put a dent in sales as of Thursday. Just demanding that you treat your employees with human dignity is such anathema to these people. This fucker flies to Seattle every day. Every day. He makes more, percentage-wise, he makes more than any other CEO in America. And this is I'm nostalgic for a time I didn't live in, or at least a time I didn't work in. That's what I'm nostalgic for. I'm nostalgic for the get a job, keep a job, buy a house, raise a family, go on vacation from time to time. That's what we had. That's what we had when I was a kid. Both of my parents worked. We did pretty well until the divorce. You know, we weren't rich by any stretch of the imagination, but we were not uncomfortable. You know, I wanted books as a child, and my dad bought me every book I asked for. Every book I asked for, without blinking. Sometimes I'd want too many at a time, and he'd be like, pick two, pick three, and we'll get the rest some other time. But dad never told me no on books, even if he thought they were well outside of my reading level early on. The only book I remember having that he took away from me when I was a child was a book called Black Sunday. It was about a terrorist attack on an NFL game. And his point then was, is he's like, there's parts in this that are kind of dark, and I don't want you to know about them yet. That being terrorism. He didn't want me paranoid. But sorry, talking about my dad, I get a little thrown off. But now, did you know that the United States of America does not subsidize its athletes that go to the Olympics? So many other countries do. You're competing on behalf of the United States. You're wearing the flag. You're wearing the uniform of an Olympian. And you've got folks competing in the Olympics from America that are losing their houses because they had to take out a mortgage to get there. That are poor. When we do athlete profiles and they talk about the struggle should be working out and competing at the highest level on the planet. That should be your struggle. You shouldn't have to worry about it. If you qualify for the Olympics, I have no problem whatsoever, and I encourage the idea of a stipend and some travel vouchers, maybe. Maybe get that fucking plane that the Qatar bribe brought in and fly these kids over there. There's not that many compared to how many seats are in a 747. I believe we only had a couple of hundred contestants. How many people can you fit in a 747? I have no idea. And nobody wants to hear me type. So, I mean, that's just what we come down to, is it's these people go over there, and then reporters want to ask them questions. The international press is like, hey, so America's a shithole third world country now. How do you feel about that? And some of the athletes are like, you know what? I'm not very happy with what's going on in America right now. At which point, the White House, especially what's her name, the false Christian Leavitt, takes a shit on people that have spent their lives becoming the best in the world at what they do. And she, who is one of the best liars, she's not even good at it, because her lies are all just, well, frankly, malarkey. So she's not the best at what it is. She just does it a lot. She's repetitious. She lies more than just about anybody else, her boss being the one who lies the most. But he is her mouthpiece, so I guess you couldn't expect her to tell the truth very often. But taking a shit on these kids for speaking their mind, that's insane. That's fucked up. Making fun of some Olympians for what they'll do to get ready and perform better, well, that's where we get to have a little fun, because Olympic athletes are currently under fire for reportedly getting penis injections for a competitive edge. German language publication Bild reported last month that ski jumpers were injecting hyaluronic acid into their sex organs before being measured for their skin-tight suits. On Thursday, a reporter asked the Anti-World Doping Agency president, Wiltold Banka, whether the rumors about penis injections were legit. Banka answered saying, ski jumping is very popular in Poland, his home country. So I won't promise you, till I promise you I'm going to look at it. But if I understand this correctly, you get the penis injection. It makes your unit bigger. And if you have it tucked in just the right way, it provides extra lift. Whereas I believe what I, my point was, is that if you're going to put me in a skin tight suit without a dance belt, you better believe I'm going to get a penis injection, if for no other reason than I'd like to look somewhat normal. That's all I'm saying. It's weird. It's weird. When I was swimming competitively in high school and a little bit in college, a little bit in junior high, I used to shave the backs of my legs and leave hair on the front of my legs so I'd have a better grip in my downward stroke, but that I would have a smooth surface coming back up. I have no idea if it worked. I don't believe that it did. I didn't win enough that I could say, ha-ha, the weird patterns I have shaved on my legs have worked. But I did it. I did it religiously, and I looked ridiculous in shorts when I wasn't in the pool. At the pool, everybody understood what was going on. My favorite was a state championship swim meet that I was swimming in, and I shaved the backs of my legs, and then on the front, I did sergeant chevrons about 4 inches apart with the pointy arrow part going towards the top of me, or when you're swimming, forward. And I was convinced that was going to work. I was convinced it was going to work. And it may have worked. I didn't win that one. I won a few, but no, I didn't win that one. But my legs look spectacular. And I guess it's just another benefit of being a redhead is that most of your body hair comes in blonde and nobody can tell that you're doing dipshit like that. Regardless, guys, congratulations on your temporarily bigger penises. I hope it works. It does. I'm at the end of this. So what I'll do at this point is invite you guys over to Patreon, patreon.com/defenmedia, D-E-F-E-N media. Every week that we record, we put special content over on the Patreon. I don't know what it's going to be this week. I've got a few links. I'll definitely talk about that. I already dished and dumped and cried at you guys about Dad. So that probably might not make it, but I don't know. Patreon's a lot of fun. And if it's not a lot of fun, it's very informative. Stuff that we need a deeper dive on, stuff that we aren't constricted on time with, gets pushed to Patreon sometimes so that we can have the deeper discussion. And what we want to do is invite folks like you to come out and join us at patreon.com/defendmedia. You know, it's only $5-$10 a month, whatever level you decide to come in on. It pays for the bandwidth, entirely. It is spent entirely on bandwidth. It does not cover the cost of the bandwidth. I'm still out of pocket for about a third of that. So nobody's getting rich. Nobody's going on vacation. Thanks to you guys. All we're asking is that you help support free press, independent, whatever this is. I mean, we're certainly not journalists at this point. You know, we're talking heads. We're just like all those other schmucks on TV. We're just better at it. We're coming from a better place. We certainly swear more often, which I have always found to be delightful. Nothing like an adult vocabulary to just really pep up a conversation, is there? Just saying. You use those words. I use about 12 more. Checkmate.
If you've made it this far, you might as well join us on Patreon. Patreon.com/defenmedia. This episode and more always available at www.theleftshow.com.